I know that's, I'm being unfair when I say that. Yes, I mean, I want to tell you, did you see Reasoner's piece on the Golden Temple last Sunday and the original one last? I mean, there's not, I didn't see anything better in print than that. And if you wanted an insight into why that country is so driven and so unhappy, that was the place to get it. I mean, and I don't exclude any print I saw on it, and I read, I think, most of it.
How about on Evening News, on things that happened overnight?
Well, without, you know, a specific target or in front of me, I mean, I don't know. I mean, my answer is yes. Yes, we can do it. And of course, you know, unlike the New York Times, which was going to spend 2,000 words on a story occasionally, we don't do that. The nature of the beast I'm with is different. It's not to say it's worse, but it's different.
For example, internationally, you have bureaus in London, in Europe.
Yeah, London, Germany, Paris, Rome, Warsaw, if you consider that Europe. No, I'm not being, I mean, we characterize Eastern Europe as a different beast than Western Europe. That's, yes, that's where our bureaus are, in Europe. And there's no newspaper I know that has that many bureaus except for the New York Times. Washington Post doesn't cover Europe that way. Los Angeles Times doesn't cover Europe that way. And in each of those bureaus, we have more than one reporter. Now, you know, I'll give you another question for the next guy who's in my position. That's only one half of the equation. I mean, news coverage. The other half of the equation is what gets on the air and how it gets on the air. But that you can ask the next guy up here. Back there with the hat. I can't hear you. I'm sorry. Yes, okay, that's a mixed bag. In this case, the reporter had, in the case of the von Bülow thing, no reporter had been assigned to it. It was dangling there. As I say, it was on the back burner. This producer, because of his personal involvement I referred to, had it on his list of things to do. But how a story is created in the first instance or assigned is really a mixed bag. Is the 20, it's kind of a bizarre, not bizarre, but it's a bazaar, okay? The 21 reporters are constantly churning up ideas, which are discussed as it seems appropriate with a particular correspondent or with Don Hewitt, the executive producer, or all three of them together. And it's really basically a very informal seat of the pants arrangement. You like it, you don't like it. It's gangbusters. Let's do it. And that's the way it falls together. Now, there's a flow the other way, where the particular reporters, or Hewitt, too, particularly, will come up with story ideas and say, hey, this is terrific. Let's do this or let's do that, and try to sell some producer on doing it or some correspondent on doing it. In no way have I ever heard or has it ever happened that I know where somebody has been assigned to do something he really didn't want to do. But most of the flow is our producer-generated ideas. There's a flow the other way of correspondent-generated ideas. And when I say among the most fertile, although it hasn't fallen to me since I've been back, among the most fertile sources of story ideas, I am told over and over again, is the mail. And the mail just churns up. I'm told wonderful stories, and I'm told that if I ever run into a bear patch, which hasn't happened yet, I should just go to the box of mail, which is available to everybody at the front of the office, and just thumb through it. By the way, 60 Minutes generates more mail than any other broadcast on the air today of any kind. Yes? Well, I just gave you an example. I mean, Mr. Reagan decided that Mitch Snyder shouldn't die, even though it was going to cost the federal government, I think, do you hear different figures, $4 to $8 million. I mean, that's Morley Safer and a producer named Norm Gorin did a piece a couple of months ago about home knitting in Vermont and New Hampshire, where organized labor in this country is ferociously against it and claims it's a violation of the rules, and they're afraid it opens the way to sweatshops. And if you read the papers this week, you see where the Commerce Department has suddenly decided that home knitting is okay after 50 years of having this prohibition in the books. I can't say to you that somebody in the Commerce Department watched 60 Minutes and decided to go against 50 years of practice. I leave that for you to decide. But there are examples, there are circumstantial evidence in the case of 60 Minutes all over the field pointing towards cause and effect. And I don't know if anybody's bothered to do a study to figure it out. But I wanted to remind you what I said earlier. In theory, I don't want to, the consequences of any story we do are immaterial. It shouldn't have any effect on the producer or the reporter. I'm sorry.
Would you care to comment on the statement I once heard that a producer's holiday is a week in the hospital?
I don't know. That's kind of self-glorification. Everybody works hard, okay? I mean, there's enough downtime, I think. I mean, look, I've snuck a day away from the office here. I mean, I can count it either way. I can count it as hard work. I flew up from New York. I've spent all day talking. I'm hoarse. It's not my usual line of work. I'm going to fly back tomorrow, do expense accounts on which I'm delinquent. And so I can count this as a work day or an off day, whichever. I'm having fun. But you can. And so there's a lot of days like that, which you can define any way you want. And a lot, you know, it is hard work. And I don't think anybody steps into this business, or if they shouldn't, if they do, without some more than usual dedication. And there's a penalty to be paid in personal lives. I think it's paid quite severely by people who go into the news business, and not just television, I think in print too. It's a hyper situation, just the nature of the beast. Yes? I think they saw in Dan Rather a guy who'd spent his whole life in the news business, who had been to Vietnam, had spent time in London, had been the White House correspondent, had been involved in important documentaries, and had a career at 60 Minutes. And if you're looking for bona fides, was already a personality in his own right. And what better resume do you want? I mean, Anchorman is such a rare job, and there are so few of them. I mean, this guy, you look over this thing I just sketched for you, he looks like he was born for the job. The only real contender at the time was Roger Mudd, well, in shop. I mean, there may have been contenders from outside of CBS News. I have no knowledge that there were, or if there were, who they were. But I wouldn't have been privy to those discussions anyway. But inside the shop, the only contender to Rather was Roger Mudd. And I can't tell you the reasons it went to Rather, but what was much spoken about at the time was the range of Rather's experience and the range of Mudd's experience, which was quite limited. I'm not saying that was the definitive reason, but that was the one that was most talked about among the troops. Yes?
This is kind of a lighter question, but where does Andy Rooney 60 Minutes?
At the end of the show. And I don't know how to answer that.
Does
I mean,
he just kind of lighten things up at the end? And he seems to have some really unique ideas. Does he get them in writing, or does he think of them himself?
Oh, no, he self-generates almost everything. I mean, and not all of them get on the air. I think the vast majority of them do, but there are some that haven't gotten on the air. And he does them himself, and he produces them himself, and he presents Don Hewitt with a tape package, and Don, you know, suggests changes, or they talk about the idea before he embarks on doing it. And There used to be a debate at the end of the broadcast between a right winger and a left winger, and a couple during the Nixon era, and that came a cropper, and got boring after a while. And then there was a period where there was nothing. Everybody felt the show shouldn't just end the way it ends. And there was Rooney, suddenly a bestseller. God, the only man in history, I guess, who's had two or three on the bestseller list with two or three at the same time. It never happened before. But compilations of pieces he's done on the air. And he thinks he's the secret of 60 Minutes success. Yes, yes.
Thank you very much. Oh. If any of you have any other questions, perhaps you could address them after the election. We hope that you've enjoyed this evening's event. If anybody would like more information on...